Hello, I am Cody Allingham, and this is the Transformation of Value podcast. This show is brought to you by Swarbricks, the first law firm in New Zealand to accept Bitcoin for legal services. The Swarbricks team are Bitcoiners, and they are knowledgeable about the legal aspects of Bitcoin in New Zealand, as well as general legal advice. Swarbricks offers a 20% discount for services paid in Bitcoin. Find out more at swarbricks.co.nz/Bitcoin. Now, in today's episode, I talk with Sam Keevy, CTO and Director at GridShare. GridShare are a New Zealand company building flexible load infrastructure centered around Bitcoin mining. We talk about how flexible load works and the benefits that it provides to the power grid, how it interacts with renewable power generation, and what the opportunities and challenges are given New Zealand's unique energy mix. We also discuss the emerging opportunities for landfill methane capture and what it actually takes to put in the proof of work to stand up a mining operation as GridShare have done. Sam also shares a new initiative from the company offering hosting services for Bitcoin miners in New Zealand. I do hope you enjoy this episode. If you want to support the show, please consider leaving a review or boosting some sats via your favorite podcasting 2.0 platforms such as Fountain or Breeze. Otherwise, onto the show. I'm keen to just start a little bit about you, man. Like, where are you based? How did you get to this moment today? Like, what's your background, Sam?
Yeah, I'm based in Littleton, near Christchurch, and I think probably the start of this journey was a physics degree at Canterbury University. I started engineering and just didn't enjoy it that much and went into the sort of a little bit more cerebral side of physics. Pretty well enjoyed that. And before that, I was sort of a kid who grew up with, you know, a computer in the house that I got to pull apart. So I think pulling apart things and fixing them was part of my childhood. And then... after a wee bit of time overseas, I ended up back in Christchurch at a company called Enertel. And they're not a household name, but they are, I think, leading the world in a niche of power electronics design and manufacture. And they make these things in Christchurch. It's not commonly known, but they have a big factory. They're making electronics. And there I was exposed to the design and the manufacture of these, which you don't normally see together in one building. And they're building big battery chargers for forklifts. So that sort of came into relevance later when I stumbled on these Bitcoin mining ASICs. But while I was there, I also had the opportunity to work on a solar project that they were doing, so the solar electronics that you need to convert solar panels into grid voltage. So I spent quite a lot of time trying to make a whole solar package work for a household, and sort of the household use case was challenging. When you put solar on your roof, you don't get much money back from the grid, and so when I left Enertel, I had this conclusion that in order to make people adopt renewables at scale, you need to use and utilize the power in the moment it's being produced. We'd played with batteries quite a lot at Enertel, and the conclusion was, and except for some sort of corner cases and using it at home, when you're the power goes out, batteries don't really help the return on investment for putting solar on your house much. And I think that's where things sort of led to where we are today at GridShare. And going on that journey of how do I make renewables pay and at what scale do I want to tackle that problem? So that's my journey. There's other people that come in, obviously. But that's sort of my background.
Yeah, no, thank you. That's really interesting. So the idea that to To really make renewables work, you need to utilize power at the moment it is produced. I mean, that's an interesting take. And I mean, I know my own father's looking at what his options are for putting solar on and battery options and things like that. But it is quite an expense to have that battery pack set up. And I mean, I guess the idea is you could utilize it during the evening, that, you know, that night. But it sort of longer term, are you saying there's perhaps a paradigm shift there with residential solar, residential renewables?
Well, I think there's sort of two main problems. The cost of batteries, they're obviously coming down, but the logistics of getting a battery installed in everybody's home and doing that equitably, I see that as a real challenge, ignoring the fact that the lithium and other materials that are typically used in a battery like this, pretty hard to come by and in demand by some big players trying to build EVs and things like that. I just think it seems to be really easy to say, oh, well, just batteries will solve everything. And I'm not convinced that they will anytime soon at a grid scale, at the scale that we need to accelerate renewable adoption and lower the cost of rolling out the renewables so that the end consumer has affordable renewable electricity.
So when you say challenges with it being an equitable rollout, what do you mean by that in terms of the price of batteries?
Batteries are always going to be expensive until we come up with a complete shift in the design, the chemistry. And having everyone in our society be able to adopt a battery into their home and into their lifestyle without being heavily subsidized, presumably by the government, I can't see that happening rapidly.
Yeah.
As rapidly as we need to make changes. Yeah.
That's really interesting because, I mean, there's certainly a narrative around that. You know, you've got these kind of really cool brands that have battery systems available. You know, there's a package, the idea that it kind of is, I mean, it's quite fashionable, you know, to have a Tesla battery pack in the shed. You know, it's something to be proud of. And there's a brand recognition there for the consumer. But what you're saying is that that may not work. And I can certainly see the economics of it being challenging when, you know, all it's giving you is maybe an evening of usage of that battery.
Yep.
And I imagine there's a decay in the lifespan of that thing and, you know, its ability to actually hold any charge over time. I mean, the technology will improve, but...
For sure.
Yeah,
I don't want to completely knock batteries. They're interesting. And they can meet a lot of other needs for a homeowner. You know, being able to say that you have the assurance that you can operate when there's an outage, it's great. It just doesn't have that that return on investment that you need to truly accelerate everyone to take it up. It's still an expensive proposition.
Yeah, just I mean a little bit more on that residential piece. I mean, I'm interested in this again. What, you know, my family looking at solar, and it is certainly you see it pop up more and more. And as the price of the hardware goes down, people are looking at it as an option. Do you think though the idea that represents with a kind of decentralization of power, and in light of things like the flooding and Hawke's Bay and different parts of the country that have experienced natural disasters or power outages, it kind of gives you this idea that maybe you'd be okay, but really at the end of the day you'd probably just use a diesel generator to get you through that period of time. I mean, what's the real idea here around this decentralized solar in housing?
I'm all for it. I'm all for decentralizing it, bringing the power into the community's hands. And certainly, I think one of the effects of the flooding that you just mentioned is that they realized community civil defense organizations didn't have the infrastructure to carry them through with the comms that they needed, for example. and to support their communities if their facilities were offline. And so I think that's one of the outcomes from looking at the flooding and the aftermath, is those communities are going to get battery and solar infrastructure. So that's great. And and I applaud all the community activities to decentralize and bring renewables into their own hands. What I'm really saying is saying that we'll roll out and subsidize solar on all the homes actually doesn't solve our problem when solar isn't producing anything in the mornings and the evenings, which is when New Zealand uses all of its power and most societies use that peak power. And I think it's that timing of when is power being used and when is it being produced that's not it's not widely communicated to the general public or appreciated, that that is fundamentally the challenge that's holding back full-scale, grid-scale renewable rollout, is that mismatch between the production of the power, and could be solar, but it could be wind, which is erratic as well. All through the night, you could have wind peaking and troughing, but the generator who owns that wind infrastructure is probably getting next to nothing for that power, or relatively speaking, because no one's using power in the middle of the night. So it's that mismatch of demand and generation that is one of those fundamentals that we're trying to address at GridShare, so that renewables get a good return and the consumer benefits from a lower overall cost of delivering that power to them.
Yeah, no, that's I mean, certainly something that's been really interesting to me is looking at what you described. Is it the duck curve? Is that the one you're talking
that's
about?
That's mostly influenced by solar. So you'll see the duck curve in I think it was sort of first described in California, but it's happening in Australia. And the more you roll out solar, you'll get this duck curve, a depression, in the middle of the day,
And then obviously wind being in there as well, and not being able to predict that, and that sort of variability that you describe means that it is challenging, right, from an economic perspective. And I think that's where I'm keen to hear about what your approach with GridShare is to that, and kind of what the opportunity is in New Zealand, given our mix of renewables and kind of our situation.
Yeah, sure. Look, the first thing I think you've got to understand, I think most people do, is we rely a lot on hydro and an increasing amount of wind, but a lot of hydro is in the South Island of New Zealand. And the big load center, the demand center, is up in the North Island and around Auckland. And the challenge for adding renewables in, like wind and solar, is having those renewables produce power when everyone is using it in the morning and the evening. But also, like I mentioned, we want those renewables to be productive, as utilized as possible. So not turned off or discarded, essentially, in those hours that they're not in demand. And the low pricing periods when there's no demand, that does affect the contracts that those generators can, the pricing that they can achieve in a contract. And so essentially what we're proposing is bringing a variable, highly variable load, so demand, and putting it out at those locations of generation, like wind, hydro, solar, and utilizing the renewable resource when it's available and plentiful and surplus. That helps shore up the price that the generator gets on average, because we're paying for that power from them when no one else wants it. But we're also able to turn off that load very rapidly, that demand is able to turn off in seconds, in less than seconds even. So that this community, the families and the businesses who start up in the morning, they get that peak power delivered when they need it, the same in the evening. And so being able to react very rapidly with a large load is the concept that GridShare was founded on. So we built large computing modules into containers, and they pay the generator in the time when no one else wants the power, and they turn off when there's high demand in the grid. And so they're solving two problems with that one action of turning on and turning off. You're maximizing the utilization of your renewable generator assets, and you're delivering power for that hour or two a day that is really needed in the grid.
Yeah, no, that's really fascinating. I watched the documentary on TVNZ looking at your Southland facility, I believe it is, and it kind of gave a lot of detail about how that actually works. So that's a hydro asset that you're located right next to, with these,
right. Yep.
Bitcoin mining facilities right there. You can mm-hmm. you can run it really easily, and then, as you say, when there is that timing, when that timing works out, you can shut that down really quickly and curtail that load, and then that becomes available to the grid to use, and you can match that really easily.
It's like a spigot.
Yeah.
When we turn off a megawatt of power, by the fact that we're sitting next to the dam, next to the generator, that megawatt of power goes into the grid. There's no other sort of mechanics to it, and that is going in at a time when there is an elevated demand, and so you get an elevated price for the power for that half an hour or 5 minutes, depending on where you are in the world.
Yeah,
and so the generator is able to sell that megawatt hour of power for an elevated price, so they get to exploit the high price periods, get the most out of it, the generation asset, for that short period, and otherwise sell the power to the data center.
Yeah,
and outside of those hours.
And how have you found it, the relationship working with the generators? And so you guys come in, GridShare comes in with this arrangement and this idea. Has there been like a positive response at this concept? I mean, it's quite a new paradigm in terms of, you know, load demand curtailment. Yeah. Like, how's that played out?
Yeah, it's been really interesting. I won't say that everybody leapt at it and we're fighting them off, because it is an unusual concept. I think it's worth noting that in our exploration of finding a site and a partner to set this up at, we heard from a lot of generators that they had been fielding requests from Bitcoin miners left, right, and center, and they had no interest in setting up Bitcoin-focused Bitcoin miners. I think one of the comments was, we chose to go with GridShare because you understood what a kilowatt hour was, and that your focus is on the energy piece. The Bitcoin is almost a means to an end. It's a beautifully simple exchange of value from kilowatt hours to something we can digitally realize in value. And it tolerates being turned off very nicely. It doesn't mean it's the only load or computing type that can fit this profile, but it's a really great place to start.
Yeah, I mean, on that note, I mean, what other options exist in this space that you can instantly curtail? Like, what else could exist within New Zealand?
Yeah, There's a really fast growing demand for compute, sort of made relatively public by the push on AI in the last while. That the computing systems that train AI models like ChatGPT, they are huge arrays of GPUs churning away in a Microsoft data center somewhere. So AI is one option. There's a whole load of computing demand for anything from pharmaceutical drug modeling to fluid dynamics modeling. A surprising amount of the world runs on heavily computed tasks that don't need to be done in real time. So a lot of these tasks might run for days or weeks at a time. An example of one in New Zealand in particular would be the film industry, with computer graphics and rendering films. Those are tasks that go on for weeks and weeks. So tasks that can be interrupted and resumed an hour later, are in the prime spot for this.
Yeah, just on the economics of that, I mean, a cluster of GPUs rendering a film. I mean, how does that look compared to Bitcoin mining, say, on a kilowatt basis? Like, is there a great disparity in profit margins and that sort of thing, or?
You hit the nail on the head. It's not straightforward. That's why Bitcoin mining is so perfectly suited to this. Generally speaking, if you buy the latest GPUs, the work that they do is extremely valuable. And so what you find is there's no incentive at that revenue point to turn off in order to sell power into the grid. But we're working on ways around that, and it can be adapting older equipment and finding the right tasks and customers is the key there. But it's something we're actively involved in hunting down that perfect match.
That's cool. And I guess talking about the hardware a little bit, I mean, ASIC machines, the sort of, I mean, GPUs, let's flip it. I mean, GPUs are a little bit easier to come by, I guess, sometimes. But when you're talking about ASIC machines, I mean, there's still supply chain questions. You've got to know a guy who knows a guy in a lot of cases, or, there's procurement processes to go through. I mean, how have you found the, I guess, the how have you found it getting the equipment together, bringing it into New Zealand? I mean, there's a bit of knowledge involved in setting that stuff up. I mean, what's that journey been like, understanding how to build an ASIC farm?
Yeah, I think on the procurement side, I think we've been relatively lucky. We've made contacts into the supply chain quite close to some of the major suppliers, and that served us really well. So partnerships in that space, relationships in that space have been really fantastic. And obviously through COVID times, we were building the site down in Southland, and that was challenging, delays in sh shipping and things like that. But I think we're right at a price point now for these machines where it's fantastic opportunity to get hold of them. I think we'll be seeing an increase in price pretty soon. But it's a great time. Now they've never been cheaper, almost.
No, absolutely. And I mean, the equipment is, I mean, there is a value there. I mean, it sort of hasn't fully been realized, I think, in the more even amongst most people, but definitely within the general public, there's definitely not an awareness of what these machines mean, because effectively you can plug them in and they make money. And this is a very powerful thing, because even going back to the GPU idea with AI models and rendering, I mean, there's a lot of There's a lot of layers there to plug into that. I mean, you can sell that. You can sell that compute. There are markets for that, but there's nothing as easy as plugging in a Bitcoin miner, pointing it to pointing it to a pool, and you're good to go. And I mean, what are your thoughts just within New Zealand, the awareness of these things, almost from a geopolitical sort of strategic perspective, having these machines and having hash rate in the country? I mean, is that something you guys think about at all?
There's certainly geopolitics that from a risk perspective, where are these machines made? Where is the core technology? And that's Taiwan, which is a bit of a geopolitical hotspot. So from that perspective, obviously the Bitcoin network benefits from being decentralized, and the more that we have that's renewable and distributed around, that's a good thing. It's a good thing for the Bitcoin network. But obviously, you know, I dream of the day when we have a chip fabrication plant here in New Zealand running on renewable energy. I think that's a long way off, but I would love to dream of the day when there's an ASIC manufacturing supply chain in New Zealand. but chip fabrication is one of the most challenging things I think humans have ever done.
Yeah.
So we'll have to see where that journey goes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess there's sort of different things going on here, but the idea that, you know, you guys have got hash rate in New Zealand that you're able to sell locally is, I think, a really big, it's a big thing that, you know, the further you go into the Bitcoin rabbit hole, you begin to understand how this all works, because for the most part, buying Bitcoin in New Zealand is buying Binance Bitcoin that's on sold via resellers here in New Zealand. Sure. You know, there's no market, or there's not
New,
much
New
of
Zealand, sort of a New Zealand niche.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so we effectively, you know, for the vast majority of people to buy, you know, Bitcoin over the counter or just through a reseller in New Zealand, they're buying Bitcoin effectively through one of these big offshore exchanges that are then brought, you know, that liquidity is brought into the country. But people like yourselves, if you do sell, then you're actually supplying that into the market in New Zealand. And that's obviously not a very big piece at the moment, but I think that represents a further decentralization. And I mean, that can only be good, right?
Yeah, really early on, this was one of the ideas that we floated, was offering a unique renewable locally sourced Bitcoin offering. It's not off the table, but we don't specifically market it as such. It's sold through a generic exchange at the moment, and you know, as always with Bitcoin, there's people with different views about whether you can label something that's like Bitcoin. One Bitcoin is no different from another, but there is always the opportunity to market it as sourced from a renewable source and supporting a local operator. Absolutely, it's not out of the question.
Yeah, and I mean, again, you know, a lot of respect to you guys for, I guess, pioneering this and having some really solid, solid stuff out there, some really cool infrastructure that you've built. And I wonder, I mean, does this pave the way for this at a larger scale? And does this, you know, have you had interest now that you've actually got something out there and it's working and, you know, people can see it? Has there been other conversations or other things that you're interested in? Has there been more interest more broadly from the generators in what you're doing?
Yeah, good question. There's definitely interest. I would say it's more globally driven than New Zealand specific. There is, I would love to see this grow. The whole idea of this project that we've got in Southland was to demonstrate the capability of flexible loads, Bitcoin mine that can turn on and off to help grow renewables here. So I'd love to see big renewable projects here utilize this. The New Zealand scene is a little bit more conservative than you might find globally. And there've been a few, shall we say, fingers burned. In recent times, there was an offshore Bitcoin mine project which went south in Southland as well. And I think that didn't look particularly good. I would love to turn that around and make that into a good news story with a New Zealand company. But we are only just now, I think, getting some of the narrative turned around Bitcoin mining, that it's not the villain that it's been made out to be. That if you're Bitcoin mining from a renewable resource, you're just like anyone with a computer on the internet powering their computer from a renewable resource. It's a node on a network. Absolutely, the goal is to grow this and to support renewables adoption into the grid faster than we otherwise would have.
Well, it seems like New Zealand could be a really good case study for that, given the high percentage of renewables and the unique situation as an isolated grid. We're not plugged into anyone else, and so there's this kind of unique opportunity. And again, it's sort of coming up, up against the conservatism of, legacy institutions and just sort of approaches to things in a very rapidly changing world. But, there are certainly key people who you and I know, and I've had a few of these people on the show who are really actively working on this, because, I mean, I have hope. I'm holding out for New Zealand to really pioneer this stuff. And given that the Bitcoin that's being mined here can be certifiably renewable, and again, whether that is a much of a muchness or not is, I mean, it's a debate to have. But certainly, we can say, look, this is coming from renewable sources, and we can prove it. That's a really powerful selling point. And I wonder if that's something that has awareness at higher levels. We've just had a change of government. I mean, are there conversations happening around what that can mean from a strategic perspective for New Zealand?
I would love to have those conversations. Really presenting the grand vision here. I mean, my vision for New Zealand is a vastly decentralized generation infrastructure, utilizing renewables all around the country, not so centralized like we have now with hydro, and allowing those renewables with these data centers acting as a buffer, if you like, to help regulate the grid. We'll be able to achieve more of a phase out of the fossil fuels that are providing the grid stability at the moment. That's one of the other things. If you add renewables, you get more unstable, and you need the fossil fuel generators to kind of maintain stability. So I think we can help in both sides of that equation, phasing out the fossil fuels and the stability, providing the stability they would have provided. But also, there's the element that when all of these are operating, these renewably sourced data centers, they are an export product. They are exporting digitally, instantly around the world, without the challenges that I think some of the other potential options here would be hydrogen. There's a lot of talk going on about hydrogen being a dynamic load that can help with peak loading. But the challenges and the logistics and the inefficiencies around compressing and transporting hydrogen, if you wanted to export it, are pretty immense versus the simplicity of turning a kilowatt hour into some Bitcoin. I see that as a real export opportunity for New Zealand, not just in the Bitcoin space, but exporting of intense compute resources and tasks.
Yeah, that's an interesting vision. I mean, I've had that conversation about hydrogen as well, and there's a lot of facilities you need, like ports and storage units and tanks and all sorts of things, which, depending on where you're doing it, a lot of the real juicy opportunities are inland or they're far away from any kind of infrastructure anyway. And so there's sort of a chicken and egg situation where you can't even justify building something because there's not enough highways and roads and even transmission lines for it to get off the ground, right?
I mean, I don't want to bag everything to do with hydrogen because there are some cool things you can do with hydrogen. I think that there's a place for hydrogen in heavy transport. But the idea that it's going to play a role in the near term transformation and transition to renewables is, I think, is a fantasy. Whereas what we're doing today, with data centers and flexible demand is available now. You can, if we had the capital, we could just build and build and build. There's no technical challenge, or uncertainty or massive risk apart from the obvious part of Bitcoin.
Oh, yeah, and I mean, that's a good point. And it comes back to what we started talking about at the beginning as well. There's a place for everything, and there's a it's about having that mix and having, different
There's no
layers.
one. There's no one solution.
There's no one solution.
But I really feel like we're sitting on a massive piece of the puzzle.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And I guess another counterpoint to look at, so you guys are, operating these mining facilities, and we've seen in the United States and other places these real massive facilities emerging. But then there's also a lot of small scale miners with maybe one machine, people like myself. I've got a Bitcoin ASIC that I use at home, and it's sort of having that conversation about around what that means as well, because there is the potential, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, that there is risk when you're trying to build these facilities. You're trying, there's a lot of capital investment. There is arguments that perhaps this is not something that's long term going to work out for that level of capital investment. You've got these machines, you've got all of the upkeep. Is that a risk that you're looking at in terms of what happens if, yeah, there's a prolonged depression in price? What does that mean for you?
That's always on your mind. I mean, we kicked off operations at our Southland site in about June of 2022, and pretty soon after that, we headed into a depression, and we got through that when a lot of other big miners failed because they were up to their eyeballs in debt, and we had none. So we're able to be very lean and continue operating. It wasn't fun, but we got through that period unscathed. It has slowed us down a little bit. We did have a faster rollout plan, but we're getting there now. And I think fundamentally, you're going to see some sort of accumulation of scale because of the inherent costs of maintaining and running a facility, than the human resources that you need to keep and maintain a system going, but also generators generally are tend to be larger, and you can achieve economies of scale in the infrastructure that you're putting in, so that you can lower some of those other risks.
Yeah, and I guess on that note, so I mean there is that risk, but I mean it's a risk for everyone, I guess. But looking at the mining, the mining side of it, when you acquire those machines, I mean how does that work from an accounting basis? I mean there's obviously a lifetime usage on those machines. You buy them brand new. There's a depreciation schedule, that sort of thing. I mean, there is, and there's new hardware coming out that's more efficient, the amount of terahashes per joule that you can get and that sort of thing. I mean, there seems to be a lot of knowledge and kind of know-how in that space. that you guys have had to maybe bootstrap yourselves. I mean, how do other companies pick this up? Is there room for consultancy and sort of engineering expertise in this space in New Zealand?
Absolutely. I mean, they exist. There's Bitcoin mining consultants that exist I know of in the US. Whether there is the scale to support something like that in New Zealand, we've obviously we've had to do this in-house to understand and onboard all of these aspects ourselves. And I think a lot of it is really has a precedent in the IT sector. Mm-hmm. So, you know, unfortunately, your average laptop that a business might buy probably only has a lifetime of 5 years. And it's not too dissimilar for an ASIC miner that's going to produce Bitcoin for you. It's how you treat them. How can you extend the life of them through the way that you house them and operate them? Yeah.
Yeah. And I guess changing tact a little bit, Sam. So we've been talking about the energy side of things, but looking at Bitcoin more specifically as a commodity, as a form of money, as a potential revolutionary technology. I mean, how have you, I mean, you've been obviously working with it, but how have you seen it from that side of things in terms of the money and what it could mean more broadly? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's been an interesting journey for me because, like you say, I came to this from an energy perspective. It was purely how do I solve this unutilized renewable energy problem? And I knew computing of some kind could be a solution and immediately thought of Bitcoin without understanding anything about it. You know, I think I probably had some of the same misconceptions. Is it trustworthy? How risky is it? And I think really did a bit of a deep dive into what is not only what is Bitcoin, but what is money even. I think that's one of the fundamentals that really clicked for me that I think is really helpful to communicate to others who are uncertain about this is dispelling the myth that money that we use every day, fiat currency, has any intrinsic value. It's only the value that we socially place on it between us, that we trust each other that $20 note is worth a couple of pies or a bit of petrol in the tank, right? That money doesn't have some inherent value in it, and that's been the case for I want to say centuries and centuries. Mm-hmm. That proof of work has been demonstrated in various societies for many centuries, and it was understanding where Bitcoin sits as a proof of work mechanism on top of that sort of bedrock of human history that really clicked for me, and then also realizing that the gold standard in the US. You know, that was severed, I think, in the 70s. And that's another trigger when we're in conversations. People say, oh, no, but that's tied to gold. It's got an intrinsic value behind it. Sorry, it doesn't. It's as made up as the next thing.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I mean, certainly you talk about proof of work, and we're kind of, in a way, a lot of this hydro infrastructure and, you know, the literal lines and transmission infrastructure that's throughout the country is a form of proof of work itself. And in a way, that's a lot of that has atrophied, and it's arguable that there's been a lack of investment long term in the energy sector in New Zealand and other places, or just infrastructure more broadly, you know. Mm-hmm. And so there's definitely connections there, and the way that Bitcoin pegs into something real like energy, and it's one of the core drivers of civilization, is really powerful. I am curious, in terms of what's going on in New Zealand, I mean, obviously you've got your Southland facility and that. Do you know, are there other miners operating at that scale that are in New Zealand? Or
Yeah, I'm not aware of any at that scale. I know of some that are on smaller generation sites that are sort of more privately operated, but I'm not aware of anything that's at the scale we
Yeah.
have. Yeah.
No, that's cool. You guys are leading the way. And I mean, what's next for Gridshare, Sam?
Well, we're growing the site that we have down in Southland. We've got more containers on order, and so that's exciting. We're growing the capacity at that site and actually looking to host Bitcoin mining equipment. So we've put a information capture piece on our website for anyone who's interested in hosting. We can do the whole end-to-end purchase, procure, and install, where you can provide us with mining equipment, and we can install that at the site. So that's our main focus for the next 6 months, is growing that site. But we have some really exciting conversations overseas in Australia and the US about renewable and landfill gas projects. So renewable wind and landfill gas, where in the landfill gas side, directly influencing a landfill to capture methane emissions and utilize them, is an incredibly powerful climate action that we're really focused on pursuing. I think it's a really exciting space. I think it's quite early days for this concept, but and New Zealand is actually a leader in landfill gas utilization, as I've discovered. But it's really tackling those landfills that can't be connected to the grid with any electricity generation that they might produce from the gas. It's tackling those projects that are a little bit outside of that Goldilocks zone, where you can connect to the grid, where we can provide an offtake for that electricity generation.
Yeah, I mean that's really fascinating. I've been following that story as well around methane, and some of the conversations that are happening in that space. And just before I left New Zealand, actually, I did a run out to the dump in Happy Valley in Wellington, and there's a big like a turbine there that somehow connected to the methane coming out of that landfill. I don't know how many megawatts that is or whatnot, but I took a couple of photos and I thought, wow, that's really cool that there's something happening there. And I mean obviously close enough to plug into the grid, but it seems like that's a bit of a sleeper that the public are not aware of, and especially just the understanding the impact of methane.
Yeah, absolutely. For those that don't know, methane essentially has 80 times the warming impact that CO2 does over 20 years. Longer term, methane does degrade, I understand. So CO2 still has a much longer term impact. But if we really want to have an impact on climate change in the near term, tackling all the methane emissions that we can is one of the big best things that we can do. And it seems that tackling it at landfills with a profitable mechanism to drive those projects forward is yeah, it's where we're focused.
So just on that, so is the idea that given that there is a profit mechanism, there can be investment made?
Absolutely. There's a fund called CH4 Capital, who are investing specifically into this. Bitcoin miners capturing landfill gas that wouldn't have otherwise been captured, and doing it profitably. Absolutely.
I wonder if something like that actually can then also bring in other what would you call it? The carbon pricing model side of things, because you're now providing a service that has this kind of, I guess, this environmental benefit that, obviously there's the price of Bitcoin.
Carbon credits are fully a part of that equation.
Yeah.
Essentially the model goes something like this. The landfill operator gets paid for the gas. Not a huge amount, not what they would get for delivering it into the grid, but these are sites that can't be grid connected, and the fund gets the carbon credits, and the Bitcoin miner gets the Bitcoin from the operation.
Yeah, and I wonder if that really opens up other conversations, because it seems like, I mean, in terms of different facilities, you know, what comes to mind, I mean, in Japan, there's a lot of, you know, burning of waste and refuse, how something like that can also be brought into it. You know, maybe there's other places where that, that mechanism, because we're sort of discovering it as we go, right? So, that, you know, throw Bitcoin ASICs into the equation, and how does it change things for more positive environmental outcomes?
Yeah, I think wherever the grid is still quite variable in its pricing, so throughout the day, like Australia would be a good example, Bitcoin miners can play a part because they have that ability to be extremely flexible if they're willing to be, in terms of when they use power and when they don't. And I won't say that incineration of waste is an area we want to go down, because that tends to be a bit of a self-feeding mechanism that I think if you look at some other countries where that's happened, that's caused a bit of an import of waste in order to feed the beast. But there are a whole lot of super interesting parallel areas that Bitcoin, I think, can play a part. Some areas that we're looking at is waste heat reuse. So the data centers themselves produce quite a lot of low-grade waste heat. So not what a heavy industry would use for high temperature, but still useful for growing crops indoors, heating water, that sort of thing. There's a whole sector in New Zealand that needs to be decarbonized that's currently using coal to heat water, for example. And this is an area that we're also just getting into, is understanding where we can basically be a heater for an existing industrial process, and we get to share the price of electricity. In return, we're helping them decarbonize by electrifying their heat source.
Yeah, I mean,
there's quite a few interesting.
Yeah,
areas,
no,
yeah.
I think what's important is to have the conversation. I mean, in some of my other work, you know, I'm involved with AgriTech, and I had some conversations with ICA and others around what that means for greenhouses and that sort of thing. Because as you know, coal and wood burners are used in quite a lot of greenhouses in the South Island. It's definitely, I think, important to begin having this discourse, and it's really hard sometimes when there is that preconception around Bitcoin, but I feel slowly but surely that is changing, and people are beginning to learn what it is and understand the opportunities, and certainly you know, these discussions around renewable use and the good news story, and kind of even the grid share story, which I think was really well you know, shown on that TVNZ documentary. You know, I think these kinds of things slowly but surely push the needle towards people understanding, you know, what this means. It's not just this kind of internet funny money. It's actually this revolutionary technology that can really help with a lot of these big challenges that we're facing. Did you go into all of this thinking you were going to change the world, Sam?
Certainly with the hope that we can, and we're not done yet. Not every day, but I do wake up with that mission. I wake up with that mission because I think what we're talking about here on the energy side, the opportunity is immense, and it feels like we're sitting on a secret.
Yeah.
And you kind of want to shout it from the rooftops, but it needs context. And like you say, bringing people along to appreciate that maybe what they've heard about Bitcoin is a bit of misinformation. You can't hurry that. I understand there's an amount of time that it takes to bring people along. And that's why we launched into this project that we've built, is the only way to show is to do. And now it's on us to make that site grow and to showcase it. And yeah, certainly the documentary on TVNZ was, I hope it gets a good sort of wide viewing, and lots of fascinating stuff in that whole documentary.
Yeah, no, that's great, man. I mean, as I said, it's a lot of respect for what you guys are doing, and I think you're putting in the proof of work. You're showing what's possible. You're building stuff. You're making things happen. You said you're in Littleton. There's a place that I found out accepts Bitcoin called Mapu. It's like a restaurant.
Oh, yeah.
Are you familiar
okay.
with that place?
I am. Have I seen a Bitcoin sign there? No, I haven't.
So
but that's fascinating. Okay, I'll have to. Have you eaten at Mapu?
No. Simon Collins told me about it. So you're familiar with Simon.
Yeah, so
I just thought, oh, that's cool. You know, we've got this sort of stuff happening. Christchurch seems to be the hub, man. I keep saying it, but I think, you know, that region, Canterbury at least, is where a lot of Bitcoin stuff is happening. And I really wish we could have done this in person, man. It's always a bit hard over Zoom, but I think we explored some good stuff today. Thank you for your time. If people want to get in touch, especially with the hosting stuff we talked about, they want to follow the GridShare story, what's the best way for them to reach out, Sam?
Yeah, sure. Our website is gridshare.co, GRIDSHARE. You can email me. My email address is sam@gridshare.co.
Yeah, no, that's great.
Yeah,
hey, man.
Look me up on LinkedIn. That's easy too.
Yeah, sweet. No, that's all good, man. Thank you very much.
Cool. Thanks, sweet. Cody.
Thank you for listening. I do hope you enjoyed the show. I am Cody Ellingham, and that was The Transformation of Value. If you'd like to get in touch, please send me an email at hello@thetransformationofvalue.com, and I will get back to you.